This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I am talking to Michael Burke, who's the author of a novel called Swan Dive, S-W-A-N, and then the second word, D-I-V-E, in case my enunciation is not clear. Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm fine. Good afternoon.
Well, Swan Dive is a novel, but it is also really a mystery, a detective story, categorized as noir by your publisher. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about, first, about why you wrote a novel in the first place, what got you to do that. I know your background is primarily as an artist and a sculptor, and I'm just curious to know what drew you to this novel form, and then specifically to the detective kind of Dashiell Hammett noir story.
Mm-hmm. The why actually is a kind of strange in a way, because my wife Julie Whitaker, we had gone to India for 2 months. And she was studying Indo-Anglian literature, and rather than living in hotels and stuff, we got a small apartment in Mumbai. And it was India's an amazing place. But I began to sort of freak out a bit, because everywhere I'd go, I was surrounded by people. We felt perfectly safe, but I was just, couldn't get anywhere that wasn't four or five people within 5 feet of you. And I started getting up in the middle of the night and just going into our other room. We had almost no furniture or anything, one light bulb, and just writing. It was almost self-preservation. And there's not one line in the novel about India. It was purely just writing. And I sat down. The first thing I wrote was turned out to be the sex scene in the thing. And I liked that so much, I had to figure out how to fit it into the rest of the book. So I sort of built the book around that scene.
Well, so was there, of course, I have to ask you, was the sex scene in some way kind of psychologically a way for you to express your frustration of being in another place? Maybe it was a way of heightening your involvement with your own psyche in a way.
I think that was probably true, and I think also, since the scene I think is a little bit over the top, it released all standards. It's very nice not to be encumbered by standards. I made up a two-line couplet. I said, standards are the bane of all endeavor. Write what you want and like whatever. So just free yourself of standards. And essentially, that's what I did. And that made it easier to write the rest, in a way.
Well, of course, you did well in placing the sex scene as a really, it's a part of the narrative. It works. I mean, it's not like gratuitous. Mm. You don't feel like it doesn't belong. And it kind of has a nice turn to it, which I don't want to give away for readers. There's a surprise involved mm-hmm. in the sex scene, which works really well. So your main character, whose last name is Heron, H-E-R-O-N, ends up with the nickname Blue. Are you interested in, and of course the novel is called Swan Dive, and inevitably you can't not think about the Leda and the Swan story, because there are other elements in the story which reflect that motif. But what drew you to the including a kind of classic Greek mythological archetype into this plainly modern novel?
It's a difficult one. The first half of that, I can answer a little easier, and that was just the use of Johnny Heron, Blue Heron. When I was very young, sitting out from the, we live way out in the country, and sitting on the dam of a little lake by us, and nothing was out there, and it was dark, it was evening, and suddenly this huge shadow swept just over my head. I must have been a teenager or even less, and floated all the way down the lake and landed, and it was a giant blue heron. And it struck me so much that in my fantasies after that, when I used to have, these teenage fantasies of being a gunslinger or whatever, my name became Blue Heron for some strange reason. So I had that to work with, and so I gave the detective that name.
No, that makes it, I think that makes it kind of more interesting to know that, that it's not just a made-up Philip that goes with the book, that, that it's connected to who you are as a person and your imaginative world.
Because another thing in writing something like this, I was in astronomy for the first part of my life, then I was in city planning for a while, and then I'd been an artist for about 30 years. But I never, when I started out, really could write at all. Writing was a bane to me, and my father's a writer, and maybe that's why, I'm not sure. But writing was so difficult, and I think my low point was I was in college, and final exam on philosophy one or whatever gave me one of these questions, discuss the concept of right and wrong, both morally and materialistically, read its history of philosophical thought or something, and I just panicked. I mean, it was so, you could write anything. And I actually walked out of the exam at that point. But then later on, when I was working as an astronomer, I had to write reports back to the main office, the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory. And the reports, all they had to do was to say exactly what happened. And if nothing happened, I didn't write anything down. So they're purely factual. They had a purpose. And that, I found, was, in a sense, the secret. And in writing this novel, since it's a mystery story, I didn't have to sort of make up scenes or make up dialogues. What I had was, in this scene, this piece of information has to get across. And then the dialogue was much easier. So the whole thing to me was problem solving in a way. And as long as I had a problem to solve, I could write it. If I just had to write it in a sense of descriptive passage, I fumbled. I wasn't that good at it. But if I could write how to get this idea across rather subtly and, you know, with some, I don't know, interest to it, then I could work on it.
Well, that makes sense. Now, but of course, then the question is, what, when the sort of, there is a definite feel of the noir novel to the book. I clearly, you know, I may be set up by what the publisher put on the book, but I think that I felt you had a little bit of that clipped style, and maybe it is the reportorial style, of the kind of 20s writing, which was influenced, you know, when you have to think about Hammett and some of the others mm-hmm. of that era. I think they were influenced by journalism and by the kind of repertorial style. Maybe it's a Hemingway influence from his writing in Spain or wherever, you know, this idea that you're just telling what happened,
mm-hmm.
Which is, of course, what you're saying. Do you feel that is an influence on you as you were doing it, or is it just something that happened kind of by accident?
Well, I think you said exactly, though. I think it's an influence, yeah, but the reason it was an influence was that it, in a way, freed me from a lot of description. I did end up putting description in, but there was no pressure on. I liked that really cut-down style. I have a feeling that even in the first draft, I actually started it out with it was a dark and dreary night, which I think my publisher just said, no.
That's not even funny, right?
Just got out of there quickly. But so I did start with that. And it's interesting a little bit in the book because it starts, in a way I've been told this more than myself knowing it, with a lot of that style. And then as the book goes on, the style changes a little bit towards the end. And it gets a little bit less Raymond Chandler and a little bit more I'm not sure what.
Well, I think that's true. I actually felt that at the end of the book, you did go into a different mode. I don't know whether the style is influenced by that. It may be that you were coming to the end where you actually had to wrap the story up. And as you know, I will not give away anything that happens in a novel, especially a mystery novel, where it's important not to know until the story tells you. But I agree. I think the style changed at a certain point, maybe when your character becomes more aware of what's going on, that changed the way you describe things because your character has a different understanding now.
Because mm-hmm. he's in a sense, sort of out of it for the first half of the book.
Right. Well, he, in order for you to have a mystery, he has to not be able to figure it out right away. And also things have to happen as part of the story for him to know what's really going on. There are layers of, you know, layers and layers that he's unpeeling. And maybe it is just toward the end or at the very end, you're no longer in purely descriptive mode because he's no longer reporting back
mm-hmm.
straightforwardly what happened. He's got much, and then the other thing is he's more involved.
Yeah.
He actually has become part of the characters' lives, you know, in a way that, you know, I mean, of course, maybe that's something that the pure detective should never do. But he's, you know, he's part of the story now.
Yes, yes. I think that's true. And I did, I have to confess, I mean, I love those old, you know, Humphrey Bogart and the Raymond Chandler, whatever the famous one was. Those things, there was something about that noir that I just liked a great deal. But I don't think I read it as a kid. When I was young, I actually thought I didn't read much at all. And I went to a little local, actually a little two-room schoolhouse. We had no library, and I remember when the library truck, which came in twice a year, came in, I picked the thinnest book I possibly could, Red Badge of Courage, because that would have been easy to read. But meanwhile, I went up in the, I'm in the house with 6,000 books. I went up in the attic, and I read all of Zane Grey and all of Edgar Rice Burroughs and all. But I never considered that reading somehow. It was, that was just fun.
Right. Well, because you weren't reading the great classic works.
No classic work, and it wasn't, no test.
Right. But, if, you know, of course, I think many, many people I know, including myself, spent their youth reading books that were not necessarily great literature, but which turn out to be pretty, I mean, they were pretty well done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe that's true today as well. I'm not sure. I think, you know, there's, you know, the common knowledge or the common wisdom is that writing isn't as good today as it was in the past. I'm not sure I'd go for that idea at all.
Yeah, I think it becomes a question of definition more than anything else, on concepts of good and bad, and as soon as you do that, you get into trouble. So.
Well, that's true, and, you know, we know more than people knew before. You know, we have more kind of relativistic sensibilities. But I also wanted to ask you a little bit about your work as an artist. You know, I think what you said earlier about the book being, in a sense, you treated writing it as solving the problem. Is that how you work as an artist as well? Because I know it feels like your artistic work, which I don't, you know, I'm obviously not deeply knowledgeable about, but it looks like it's influenced by science and mathematics, and that your art is an expression of your involvement with the sciences.
It certainly is. I mean, there's a lot more science in there and other things than there is art. I didn't study art anywhere along the line. And I think that the way I actually make a piece, and at this point I'm doing mostly sculpture, is made up as I go along. I don't know what I'm going to end up with when I start. And in fact, I prefer it not to, because if I do, it becomes kind of polemic. There's a lot of writing on it, and there's even some hard to say figures and various things. So I just sort of keep creating as I'm going along, and it builds and it builds and it builds and finally ends up with something. And I rather like that process. So the whole thing, in a way, becomes the process rather than the product doing it. And if I ever try and figure out ahead of time what I want to do and try and do it, it's kind of dull, actually. I don't come up with very much.
Well, so did that work for the book as well, or did you lay out a plot for this? You know, again, once you wrote that first scene, then you had to figure out how it fit in. But did you have to plot the book, or did you just have a general idea and then figure it out as you went along?
I did. It was pretty much, let's see, I'm not quite sure. It wasn't written from beginning to end. It was sort of written from the center in both directions. And although I came up with a pretty early on with a rough idea of, like, sort of who did it and when and why and so forth, all the details of how this worked out, I really didn't know at all. So there was an awful lot of problem solving. Suddenly, you know, I find out, well, how could this person have done that? They weren't even there, you know. So you're constantly solving that kind of problem. And I felt most of the writing was doing that, just trying to make sure things were in the right order and were logically worked out one way or another. Again, I have no patience for mysteries that, you know, spring something on you in the last 10 pages.
Right.
I want to know ahead of time.
Yeah, you want sort of an honest story. Well, I mean, does that, maybe it means that your writing of this book is similar to the process that you make art?
I think it is, but, you know, that's hard to say, because they're really quite different in output one way or another.
Well, so now that you've written a book, do you feel like you have another book to write, or is this?
I've done it. I've just finished the same detective, finished a second book, and so it hopefully should be coming out probably in the late fall sometime.
Also connecting to Greek mythology, or
well,
not?
This one's called Music of the Spheres.
Sounds like a like a medieval art and maybe some alchemy.
Well, there's some nice, the concept of the music of the spheres is really quite a nice one, that there's this music that's behind things and lots of different theories about it and how it works and so forth. It's quite lovely in a way. So I can grab onto it in a number of different ways.
And music and math are also...
Yes, it's a very mathematical theory, actually.
Right. So it's another detective novel with the same main character.
Yes.
Anybody else repeating in it?
Yeah, a couple of people are in it. Basically, the police guy and basically his friend.
The woman. And what about the woman who is really the, you know, in this novel, I guess it won't give away too much, the police department that he formerly worked with is pretty friendly to him, unlike with some detectives.
Yeah.
And so he's got this guy, JJ, that is the boss of the cops, who is pretty nice to him. And then he's also got this love interest who works as a cop as well. And at least at the end of Swan Dive, we have a feeling that he's coming around to a relationship with her.
Yeah. She's in a sense, as far as I was concerned, really so much more, in a way, I don't want to exactly say intelligent, level-headed, or something than he is in the thing, and he knows that. She turns up in the next one, definitely.
Well, I really liked this book. I thought it was I liked your writing style. I liked the story. I didn't, I read a couple of reviews. I didn't think your character was dumb at all. So I'm not sure where that came from.
That might just be my own sort of self-disparagement, that I just automatically do that.
Well, I thought it was a terrific book and really a story that moved right along. And I think that other people will enjoy reading it as well. I think it's your writing style is really, quite literary. So, it's smooth. And I enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, I'm glad. Very good. Thank you.
Well, and thanks so much for talking to me today. This has been Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host, and I've been talking to Michael Burke, the author of Swan Dive, a mystery novel published by Pleasure Boat Studio, a literary press. Thanks so much.